You know, most believers hope we're living in the last days. Amen. Right? Yes. Do you hope we are? Yes. You know, I trust, you know, there's always this angst inside of me. Whenever I say, boy, I hope Jesus comes back today, then I always have this secondary thought that comes in and I think, yeah, but what about all the lost people? What about the people that I know that are not going to heaven? What about the people I'm not sure about? What about the people who sit and come in here every single Sunday and I'm not sure they have trusted Christ yet? As often as I, you know, present it, I still don't know for sure. You know, so there's always that duality there of thoughts and that conflict within us, but I trust God to know when He thinks it's the right time and when He knows this is who's going to be saved. So I'm ready for it to happen, yes? Yeah. We all want that. I think we're all hopeful of that and so on. So a lot of the world is looking for signs. A lot of Christians, they're looking for signs. You know, are we living in the last days? We talked about that last Wednesday. We look at some things that Jesus said. These are what's going to happen. When you see these things happen, He said, know that the end is near. You know, just those words, the end is near. You know, we're used to seeing those, somebody's got out on a sandwich board. You know, they're walking out on the street, you know, the end is near, and all those kind of things. So we usually think about nutty people, but it's a real thing. And we're wondering about it. I hope so. Yeah, Dave, no. So we hope that's the case, and we're looking for these. What are some signs? Let me just give you an opportunity. What are some signs do you think most people, when you say signs that the end is near, what are some things you think most people think about? Things you've read in Scripture, things you hear about. Just name a sign of the end. What's that, Casey? Earthquakes. We talked about that last Wednesday. Yes, I'm surprised. What'd you say? Pestilences. Okay? A falling away. Now remember, this is a really important point. Falling away, that's not talking about lost people. That's talking about people who claim to believe in Jesus Christ that leave their faith. We talk about that also. What else? Anything else? What about, what's that? Fires, famines, floods, all these cataclysms. And then there's that whole set of things that are going to happen. They happen in all the movies. They happen in the books we read kind of during tribulation time. What's going to happen during the tribulation time? What are some words that kind of buzzwords that come out about that? Fearful things, you know, like Mark of the Beast. Okay, so somebody just showed me recently an article that said, here's the first one, Pastor, right here. They showed me this article on their phone. It was talking about, I guess they're rolling out the very first stages of people getting an implant to identify who they are. You know, saying, right there, that's Mark of the Beast. You know, so these are the kind of things that people are looking at. And those are all real. Antichrist, you know, people want to know, you know, is this the Antichrist? Do you know every president we've had for the last three decades has been the Antichrist? Did you know that? That's what I've been told. I mean, you know, it was LBJ was the, you know, was the, and then Jimmy Carter and then Ronald Reagan and boy, then you had Bill Clinton, you know, he really was. And all those things. So you had all these things, you know, these different world leaders and everybody's trying to identify who that is and what the mark of the beast is, you know, what is the number 666 and all these things. But if we take all that away, the truth is, I spoke on Sunday about what I believe to be the general sin condition of the world that will lead to that. I think it's the greatest mark, and that is, you know, well, I won't even get into that. You just listen to the message online. But I think the biggest thing, and I think what we have to recognize is, God actually was very, very clear that there is one center of the world, and that center of the world is the city of Jerusalem and the nation of Israel. The Jews are God's people. Now, we're God's people too. We've been grafted in, the Bible says in Romans chapter 7. We've been adopted, Paul taught us. But the Jews are God's people. Israel was His nation. In fact, the Bible actually says that Israel is the bride of God the Father. We're the bride of Christ, but Israel's the bride of God the Father. And so if we want to know what's happening, if we want to know what the situation is with regard to, is the end truly near, the best place we can look at is the nation of Israel. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about tonight. I want to take you back to a verse. In fact, let me remind you of this. We say this often. Jesus was very clear, no man knows the day or the hour that Jesus comes, but we can know the season. Today feels like spring, does it not? Tomorrow may not. But what we do know is tomorrow will feel more like spring than it did winter, because we're moving into a new season. We can tell when a season is coming around, even if we can't name the day or the hour. None of us can say exactly what day spring's going to hit and winter's no more, but what we can say is we're entering into a season. And I think that's kind of what we're looking for. What's that, Dave? Yeah, well, and nobody knows when Jesus is going to come back either, except we know that there's some things happening that it's the right season. So I want to take you back to 1 Chronicles, chapter number 12. God was talking about he oftentimes describes some of the tribes, the different tribes of Israel, a certain way. And I love this description. I think this is a description of how God wants us to be. And he was talking about the children of Issachar, and he said this, "And of the children of Issachar, which were men, watch this, that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do." All right, so he said, this one group, I've created this tribe, I have gifted them, I've given them the ability to understand the world and what's going on around it, so that they could then advise the rest of Israel on what Israel ought to be doing. So they kind of had their finger on the pulse of the world and the events in the world and the things going on around them, so that they could then advise the others. Now look, I believe that today's equivalent of Issachar are truly students of God's Word. In other words, the Christians who care enough to actually really study and to really read and to really try to learn, because they're the ones that can then say, hey, time out. I know, don't get caught away with what the world's doing. Don't get caught away with what these people are saying. Here's what God said. And so here's what we should do based on what we see in the world. So I think this is what God wants from us. He wants us to study and understand so that we can be like the children of Issachar. Now, ironically, the children of Issachar in this day, they were actually looking for a king. They were trying to decide whether or not to crown David as their king. There was a little bit of a time lapse there between when Saul was killed before David was actually made king by the people. And I think it's ironic, these same, you know, the Jews are going to enter into another time. When Jesus comes back and takes the church out of here, guess what? The Jews are going to face that same decision again. Who's going to be my king? Who's going to be our king? And they're going to have a choice once again whether or not to accept Jesus as their king. And so I think that's a great application for where we are right now. Now, leading up to that, though, here we go. So today we're going to begin to talk then about the nation of Israel in the last days. And I'll take two or three Wednesday nights probably to do this. Tonight, I want to begin, and I've just sort of entitled this beginning of this study, The Beginning of the End. The Beginning of the End. Now, why do I say the beginning of the end? Well, because the end isn't going to just happen like that. It's going to be a series of things. We could be looking at the beginning. We could be in the middle, for all I know, of the end. We could be seeing some signs that we haven't been paying attention to. You know, we could be looking. You remember back in the days of Noah, I made this point on Sunday about Noah. We were talking a little bit about the days of Noah. Do you realize that in the days of Noah, people were not seeing any signs of a flood? There was no rain. Now imagine, guys building this giant boat. There's no rain. There's no reason to build a boat. There wasn't even any body of water close to where he was building this thing. So they did not know something they had never seen before was about to happen. My point is, none of us really know what's going to happen tomorrow, do we? It may be something we've never seen before. I mean, who would have thought the entire world would shut down over a cold virus? But we see what's happened. Look around. This building is almost, I mean, it's not empty, but, you know, it's a fraction. And most, and nearly every, as far as I know, every other church is sitting empty tonight. Nobody's even there. Look at what that can do to God's people. A virus can keep God's people away from each other. So it's not hard to imagine that if we're at the beginnings of something, if we are, then who knows what tomorrow brings. And that's kind of where, you know, that's kind of where this is. So the beginning of the end, or what the Bible calls and what the Apostle Paul called the times of the Gentiles. So let's kind of get into this. But before we, let's just make sure we're all on the same page here. So this age in which we live, what do we call this age in which we live? Help me out. Talk to me. The age of? Age of sorrows, we could call that, because we're talking about this that's coming. But I mean, for the last 2,000 years, what age have we been in? The age of grace. We could also call it the church age, right? How is that different from other ages? Well, when Jesus, Okay, the agent of grace means that we are saved, or we get to go to heaven based not on our good works, not on our obedience, but rather on what Jesus did, his obedience to go to the cross. And we put our faith and trust in that. Now, here's my question. When did that age begin? Did it begin in Matthew chapter 1? When did it begin? At the cross. It began at the cross. Jesus said, "This is the new Testament or new covenant in my blood." So Jesus died and ushered in a brand new age that we call the age of grace. Now, Jesus focused on Jerusalem and Israel's future, though, knowing that we would be in this time of the age of grace. So let's take a look at what Jesus had to say in Luke chapter 21 and verse number 20, please. And he said this, "Now when ye see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh." In other words, he said, when you look and you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. Now remember, he's talking to Jews here, mainly, but it also by extension then to us. He said, when you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, then you can know that its desolation is near. Now, a lot of people believe this is a tribulation verse. In other words, a lot of people believe that Jesus was looking way into the future, 2,000 years in the future, and seeing the time when Israel, when Jerusalem would be surrounded by the Antichrist and all of his armies just before Armageddon. I do not believe that's what Jesus was talking about here. A lot of people do. I don't. I'll tell you why. Because as we continue to look at this passage, in fact, we look at verse number 24, notice this. He said, "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led away captive into all nations." Now wait, time out. What happened in 70 AD? Herod's temple was destroyed and basically the Jews were taken away. They were scattered all over the world. I believe Jesus was actually referring to a time just shortly after he would go back to heaven, just within decades of when he went back to heaven. This, I believe he's talking about the fall of Jerusalem here. Notice, "And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until," notice what Jesus then said. He said, "until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." Now, if you know anything about end time events, the Gentiles really don't play much of a factor in the tribulation period. It's about the Jews. So this passage, when Jesus was talking here, what he was actually talking about, I believe, was what would soon happen, which was Jerusalem would be taken over, the temple would be destroyed, the Jews would be scattered, and watch, and would stay that way for 1,900 years. And that is what we've been living through. For the last, up until halfway through the last century, the Jews had no home. They were scattered all over the world. See, most of us don't realize that. In fact, I think almost everybody here has lived in a time when Israel was a nation. Right? Unless you were a baby. Bill, how old are you? 75. You were still 2 years before you were born is when Israel became a nation? Okay. So nobody, I don't think anybody here was alive before, when Israel did not have a place to call home. So Jesus was talking about a time here where very soon the Gentiles were going to take over and would usher in what he called the times of the Gentiles. So that's kind of what we're seeing here. But even before that, let me say this also. So Israel would not see Jerusalem really restored until the year 1967. Israel would not see that Jerusalem restored until 1967. Something called the Six-Day War. Have you heard about that? That was a miraculous victory. I may get into that here in just a little bit. But here's the thing. What do you think the general mood of mankind? So Jesus was talking about, you know, what was going to happen then? What was the kind of the mood of mankind? Look at verse number 25 here. Then Jesus is kind of casting his vision into the future. And he said, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity and the sea and the waves roaring." We see some things going on in the world that people are having a hard time explaining today. Let's continue. Verse 26. Men's hearts failing them for fear. Everything Jesus taught, he was talking, oftentimes when he would give a parable, he was actually teaching the people that were right in front of him about something that was about to happen, but he was also casting a vision for the future. Doesn't this sound like our world today? Does men's hearts failing them for fear sound like our world like right now? I mean, like right now. People are sitting at home, scared, afraid. And again, we've talked about this a lot lately. I'm so glad you all are not afraid. I don't think you came here tonight because you're afraid. I think you came here tonight because you have faith, because you believe that God is in control here and God's going to look after you. But the world is very much afraid and their hearts are failing them. In other words, they can't do anything. It's almost like being paralyzed. And for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. So clearly he's now casting into the future, talking about what's going to happen. Verse 27, then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Okay, then. So here's the point. Jesus took us on a 2,000, I believe Jesus just took us on a 2,000 year journey. He said Jerusalem's going to be basically destroyed. The Jews are going to be scattered. That's going to usher in the times of the Gentiles. And the actual end isn't going to come until you see all those things, until men's hearts start failing them for fear, until we start seeing these signs in the heavens. You remember the big to-do about the blood moons a couple years ago? Yeah. You remember that? So we look at that and we say, well, nothing happened. Well, that must not have been anything because nothing really happened. Wait a minute. When in your lifetime, let me ask you this, when in your lifetime did God ever act in what I used to call, I've said this before, God ever act in a poof manner? I mean, when in your lifetime did God ever say, okay, poof, I changed your life? Oh, okay, poof, you're saved. No, it took a while, right? I mean, people hear the gospel, and they hear the gospel, and they hear the gospel, and they do this, and they do this. Like we rejoice with Mike. It was not just instant, was it, Mike? It took a process. It was a process of things, questions getting answered and different things. When in your life has God done anything instantly? Well, God doesn't do anything instantly, usually. He took six days to recreate the earth. Yes, go ahead. What's your question?
Is that a rapture cloud?
Yes, yes. I believe this is a rapture cloud. Okay. Or it could be Jesus at the end of that 7 years. It could be Jesus coming back. But I think that's what we're talking about here. And my point is, those blood moons we saw a few years ago, that may very well have been what he was talking about here when he said, you'll see signs in the heavens. And those were prophesied back in the Old Testament. So what we're seeing here, the point is, this is kind of the introduction. I've got to get through this and really get to the meat of what we're talking about. But in one fell swoop, Jesus said, look, I want you to know. He said, first Jerusalem's going to fall, the Jews are going to get scattered, and then you're not going to hear from them for a while. There's going to be something called the time of the Gentiles. And the time of the Gentiles, they didn't know would be almost 2,000 years, but we can look back now and realize that was almost 2,000 years ago. And now, Jesus says, now, when that time is over, because remember, if he says they're the times of the Gentiles, that means there's a beginning and there's an end, right? The beginning was the cross. The end is the what? When the church leaves, the rapture. So you have these two, you have this beginning and the end, and he said, these are the signs about the time when I'm going to come back and get my church. So that's kind of the overall view that God gave to us. Now, what are the things that we see about Israel then? So Jesus then refocuses his attention on Israel in the end times. That's how we know. That's why we're watching Israel right now. That's why we're watching Jerusalem right now. That's why it was such a big deal that we just renamed as a nation, America, just renamed the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. That was a very unpopular decision. Did you know that? Did you know that 65% of Americans did not like that decision? Did you know that President Trump knew that 65% of the people did not want that? But he did it anyway. He did it anyway. And it's actually a very, very important step. Now, please don't, this is not a, I'm not, we're not going to get political, but my point is, that was a big deal. So let's get into this. What are some things that we see in Israel? Number one, we'll talk about many things over the next few weeks, but number one, Israel will be reborn. Okay, so again, remember, we've all grown up this way. But if you go back 100 years, nobody knew that nobody could have foreseen Israel becoming a nation again. Let's take a look. For almost 1900 years, Israel and Jerusalem were controlled by many, many groups of people. Many, many nations, many, many different people, but none of them were the Jews. And so that's really a very accurate description of the times of the Gentiles. So before 1948, when Israel became a nation again, nobody would have thought that Israel would be a kingdom again except true Bible believers. But on David Ben-Gurion declared the restoration of Israel to a Jewish state. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. So here's what I want to share with you. He made a statement in his speech that day. He said, if you're going to be a realist, you have to believe in something. Does anybody know what he said? He said, you have to believe. Did I put it on your paper? I didn't. Oh, I gave you a blank, didn't I? He said, if you're going to be a realist, you have to believe in miracles. Miracles. In other words, he was saying, it would take a miracle. It took a miracle to reinstate Israel in its home. Prior to that, the Jews were scattered everywhere. But after World War II, the Jews were given once again this land that we, this tiny little strip of land that my wife and I were so, so blessed to get to go visit last year. And this little strip of land, he said, that belongs to my people. God had already told them thousands of years prior that it was theirs, and it was restored to them. Now, here's what's really, really amazing. Several thousand years before that, there was a prophet named Isaiah who was sitting and doing what he always did, which was waiting to hear from God. God's prophets in the Old Testament, they would sit around and God would come to them and God would say, I have a message for you, give this to the king of Israel. I have a message for you, give this to the people of Israel. That's how the people got God's message. So Isaiah was sitting there one day and God came to him and said, I want you to write something down. What did he write down? Look at Isaiah chapter number 66 and verse 8. He said, who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such things? Now, what is he talking about? He said, shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? Do you know what happened on May the 14th in 1948? Israel was reborn in one day. And it's a remarkable thing. And so I'm sure that Isaiah was sitting there. I'm sure that Isaiah was sitting there and saying, you want me to write what? Wait, who has heard? I'm supposed to write that Israel's going to be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. You know, the prophet Isaiah would have been probably shocked at what most of the things God asked him to write down. Do you know that's the nature of prophecy? Do you know where, okay, guys, we have a big disadvantage. When you read the Bible, when you go back and read, let's be honest for a minute. How many of you have read, let's pick one. How many of you read the book of Haggai? What do you remember about it? Didn't it sound a lot like Habakkuk and Zephaniah and Malachi and Micah and Amos and Obadiah? And then you get Jonah and it's like, a story. Finally, I got to Jonah. I got a story to read. And unfortunately, it only lasts four chapters and it's over and you're back into, anybody know what comes after Jonah? Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, and we're back into these prophecies again. Now look, they're great. The prophets are important to read, but they all sound the same, don't they? They all sound the same. Well, to a casual reading, they all sound the same. They're basically, Israel has messed up, and God is saying, I'm going to fix this someday. I'm going to fix this someday. And they didn't know when that day was going to come. So we have a disadvantage. When those prophets were writing all this stuff, none of this stuff had happened. They were writing about things that had never happened. We're all sitting here looking back, and it's like, yeah, these all sound the same. These end time things, they don't really say much to me. We know that Israel, for example, was born in a day, May the 14th, 1948. But for them, the baby's going to steal the show, always does. Actually, the baby's not stealing the show. Yeah, it's the people around the baby. They're the problem. they're just irresistible, aren't they? But Isaiah would have been, he would have just thought it was a remarkable thing that God would have said Israel could be born in a day, and yet it was. So number one, let's move on. Number one, Israel would be reborn. This is one of the things that the Bible tells us what we need to watch for in Israel. So can we check that off the list? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Israel was reborn and born in a day. Number two, Jerusalem will be controlled by the Jews. Now again, back in those days, that would have been an unusual thing. They would have thought, well, of course Jerusalem's going to be controlled by the Jews. But Jerusalem was not controlled by the Jews for almost 2,000 years. Again, Luke 21:24, remember when we read it before, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led away captive to all nations. Do you see that? All the Jews living in Jerusalem, when Rome came in and destroyed everything, they basically were scattered over the whole face of the earth and have been for the next 1,900 years. So in 1967, in the miraculous Six-Day War, when the Jews were outnumbered, outgunned, outmanned, everything, they ended up taking having the most remarkable victory, and we're not going to get into all that because that's a history lesson. So the Jews retook Jerusalem. Now, what do you know about Jerusalem today? What do you know about the Temple Mount today? They're not in control of it. Who is? The Muslims. You could say that probably the Muslim powers that be. So in the middle of Jerusalem, this amazing old city, you have something called the Old City, and right in the middle of that, there's this flat area right on top, and it's a pretty large area, and it's called the Temple Mount. It's called that because the temple actually sat on top of that. Today, what is on top of it? It's the most obvious thing that you'll see. The Dome of the Rock. What does it look like? What color is it? Gold. It's gold. Whose is that? Is that the Jews? No, that's the Muslims. Now, a lot of people then, as they look to the future, they say, okay, so if we truly are living in the last days, don't the Jews have to take back control of that? And I would say to you, who was it that ever told you that the Jews are not in control of it now? Everybody says that, right? Do you know the Jews are still in control of that? They are. They actually gave temporary control to the Muslims in 1967 after they won the war. I don't know why they did that. I suppose some kind of concession, maybe to keep the peace. But here's my point. Anytime the Jews want to, they can take that land. It's just a tiny little piece on top of a hill in the middle of Jerusalem, which is theirs. I walked around. We walked around. We walked all through that. We walked all around on the top. Do you know there were way more Israeli soldiers everywhere? I mean, there's Israeli soldiers everywhere in there. Anytime the Jews want to, they can walk right back in and throw those guys out. It's really not going to be a problem. So please understand, if you're looking at whether or not we're living in the last days, if you think that the Dome of the Rock has to be destroyed, it doesn't. It doesn't. That can happen in a day. In a day, it can be destroyed. And so please don't let that, you know, there's a lot of Christians that think, oh, well, but I mean, I've heard that, you know, the Jews are going to have to take that and then there's going to be a big war. No, actually, there's not. The Jews can take that back any time they want to. Yes, they know that. They know that. Because the Jews aren't reading the same prophecies that you and I read. They're not reading what Jesus had to say. They're looking for their Messiah still to come and tell them to do it. But he will. He's going to. But not until the church is gone. When the church is gone, the veil will be lifted from the Jews' eyes and they will realize, oh, we can do this. So I just wanted you to know, there are some who argue that the Jews aren't in control, but please understand, they are. I was there. I can tell you the Jews are in control of anything they want to be in control of. Okay? Anyway, we don't have time to get into all that. I'll talk all day. Dave, do you have a question?
Yeah, what about all the false prophets?
Yeah. Well, that's what the issue will be. We'll talk about that in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, that's going to be the big issue. They're going to have to make a choice. Everybody has to make a choice. But listen, you and I have to make a choice too. They're not going to face any choice that you and I don't choose. Today, we choose to follow Jesus or follow the devil, don't we? Every day. That's right. Every day. Every single day. every day. So yes, but that is going to be the issue. That will also be the issue during the millennium, but we're not going to get into that either. That's same situation. Only it won't be Satan because he'll be locked up, but they will have to choose whether or not to listen to Jesus, and God forbid that anybody says no, because he's not going to be a lamb. He's not going to be a lamb during the millennium. Yeah, he's good. That's right. All right, let's go. Let's move on. Number three. This is just kind of the beginning. Remember, we're talking about the beginning of the end, right? So far we've checked off Israel has been reborn, yes? That's happened. How about Jerusalem being controlled by the Jews? Yes, the Jerusalem is under the control of the Jews. Number three, there was a prophecy that the Hebrew language would be restored. Look at Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 9. So again, a prophet back 2,000 years prior to before now, or more than that, there was a prophet named Zephaniah, and he was sitting one day, and God said, "I want you to write this down. For then will I turn to the people a pure language, and that they may call upon the name of the Lord to serve Him with one consent." So God was prophesying here. He said, there's going to come a day, Zephaniah, and I want you to make sure my people know, there's going to come a day when this pure language that you all use right now, Hebrew, they won't be using anymore. Do you know that for almost 2,000 years, the Hebrew language almost disappeared? About 1,800 years. Until the late 1800s, when a man named Eliezer ben Yehuda led Israel to once again use the ancient Hebrew language again. You know, and it was an amazing thing. When we were in Israel, we heard a lot of Hebrew. And I actually was talking to our tour guide, and I asked him, is this the same? Because I remember when I was, when I was studying, years ago to go into the ministry, 25 years ago, there were two kinds of Greek. There was a kind of an official Greek, then there was something called Koine Greek, which was an every man's Greek. That's what the Bible was written in. And I asked him if the same thing held true in Hebrew, and he said, yeah. He said, actually, what we're speaking now, though, is the ancient Hebrew. He said, the language that we speak is exactly the same as Abraham would have spoken. He said, but until a couple hundred years ago, that wasn't the case. So isn't that an amazing thing? Even the Jews that God gathered back together, they returned once again to the language as prophesied by Zephaniah. Number four and last for tonight, the last thing we'll talk about tonight. Again, these are some of the prophecies that have to be checked off. If we're going to know if we're in the end times, we look to Israel. So Israel had to be reborn. Israel had to be controlled. Jerusalem had to be controlled by the Jews. The Hebrew language had to be restored. And finally, and this is one of the most amazing things that I learned when we were in Israel, the desert will once again live and blossom. Notice Isaiah 35, verse 1. Now, this may seem like a no big deal to us, but I want you to really stop and think for a minute. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. Now, let me ask you, what do you know about a desert? No water. It's dead. Almost nothing lives there. Hot. Do you know we went down to the lower part of Israel where the Dead Sea is, and it is desert. You know there's a 20-degree temperature difference between Galilee and the Dead Sea? It's hot in the Dead Sea. We were down there, it was 105? And you want to say it was a dry heat. It wasn't a dry heat. But by the way, a blast furnace is also a dry heat. It's still hot. But it was hot, and it was dry, and it's dead, and there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing there. There's nothing growing for as far as you can see. It's just dead.
Did you get in the water?
I did not get in the water. Now, having said that, though, there are places in that desert that actually are filled with life. The Jews developed something a few years ago that has now become a global thing called drip irrigation. Does anybody know what drip irrigation is?
Yeah.
The Jews actually developed that, I forget how many years ago, how many decades ago. But that's where they take these hoses and they send these hoses out across sand, basically, and water just sort of drips out of it. But the Jews didn't stop there. the Jews took all the plants that they liked to eat, all the vegetables, all the fruits, all the things they liked to eat, and they were so wise, they figured out exactly what bananas need in order to grow. What nutrients do bananas need to grow? Do you know? Huh? So you don't know. Neither do I. But the Jews figured it out. So watch, here's what the Jews did. The Jews figured out how to use drip irrigation, and they figured out how to put the nutrients, every nutrient that bananas need, into that water. And those banana trees grow in sand. They don't need dirt. All they need is something to root in, because in the water that they put in there is everything that a banana tree needs to grow, and the banana trees grow just fine. And so do all of the other fruit. Do you know that they're one of the largest exporters of certain kinds of fruits and vegetables in the entire world, because they have figured out how to do it, and they do it anywhere, even in the desert. So today, all over Israel, basically the entire nation of Israel is basically a desert, except for where the Jews are artificially growing anything they want to grow. So I take you back again. And Isaiah must have been sitting there when God said, yeah, I want you to write this. I want you to write that the desert's going to rejoice and blossom as a rose. That wouldn't mean anything to, wait, you lived in Arizona. Did you live in the desert area of Arizona?
Yes.
How bad was that?
It's hot.
You would have said hotter than something else a while back in your previous life, wouldn't you? Yeah. So it's hot, and does anything grow there? Not much?
Cactus?
So you can imagine somebody who was from there listening to this, and God says, yeah, there's going to come a time when it's going to blossom just like a rose. So are we living in the last days? Well, no, let's take a look at Israel. Let's take a look at just four prophecies given to us tonight. Israel's been reborn, yes? Check. Jerusalem's controlled by Jews. Check. Hebrew language has been restored. Check. And the desert will live again. Now watch. Everything I've given you tonight, all of that, these are actually pretty, this is old news. This is all old news. This stuff all happened more than 50 years ago today. In fact, I think all of it more than 70 years ago today. There's a whole bunch more prophecies that are continuing to come with the nation of Israel. This was the beginning of the end. This was the beginning of the end. Israel coming back as a nation, being reborn in a day, that was step one. In the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about some more modern, some more recent things. And as we look at them, I think you'll look at that and you'll say, wow, this is fantastic. This gives me even more hope that we are that much closer to the day that Jesus comes back. So let's continue to study. Dave?